I was going to share another thing, but it's not quite done yet. So that's probably going to be something for another time. Got to do with my cat sitter. But I got to say, I was watched my behavior. I asked God to be with me through the whole conversation. When I got off the phone, she actually called me up in guilt, but it hasn't actually ended yet. But sometimes it's the simplest things. That's the point I'm trying to make. Sometimes it's just the simplest things that could normally just pull you completely out of a good place and consume your whole day. It doesn't have to be a big thing, right? And when we get this, we can coast through life in a much different, on a much different plane, on a much higher plane. So in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration and an intuitive thought or a decision. We relax, take it easy, we don't struggle. Sometimes the spiritual solution is about doing less, not more. Right? Sometimes we can make things worse trying to work on them. Right? Right? Yeah. See step four. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of my mind. There was some stuff that went on with the cat sitter I just kind of get the feelings that she might be a little unstable, and I don't necessarily, after the conversation, I don't think I trust her with the cat anymore. But this was after 15 years of using her, right? And I knew that there was issues there, but she kind of like freaked out, and my response to it outwardly was much different than my reaction to it inwardly, right? I asked God to guide my outward response, right? And I didn't, there was some name calling going on. I mean, there was no call for it, right? I didn't do anything that I felt that I deserved it, but as I said, she's like on the edge of something. I don't know, right? And all I simply said is I've known you for a long time, but we don't have this kind of relationship that you can talk to me like this, right? So I don't think that we have to worry about this or discuss it any further because I'm going to make other plans for Rascal. Right? And I got off the phone. What followed 10 minutes later was a half-hour phone call of her trying to validate her reactions, her behavior. Right? And I just said, thank you, but I'm still going to deal with this, with the cat sitting thing another way now. Right? So, guess what? I didn't have to make amends. Right? And sometimes that's enough to keep you on track, because I don't want to go back to this person. Right? Okay. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be. That we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. Which has come out in weird ways. I mean, think of how many people I could work with if I win the lottery. But But I'm not fooling myself. I know that that's not going to work. But think of how many more people I could help if I stay in a good place. And stay in a place where I'm an attraction to others, that I really have something to pass on. Right? We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. Shame, isn't it? That's a joke, okay? Sometimes my humor is so dry that other people don't get it, and I just laugh at myself. No, I'm just saying, if you could, how long have you tried to pray for winning the lottery or the right relationship or the, you know, and it just, you know, I've never I've just never gotten what I want necessarily. Not at least enough of one. I mean, I prayed for her and I got her, but she wasn't enough. I wanted that one. No. I have to see that my attitude towards prayer has to be for strength to do the right things in life, right? The things that are helpful to others. I have to see that those are the times I really need that inner strength. When I'm confronted with things that I'm so afraid of, that it robs me of the life I might have had if I didn't allow fear to run it. You know, or to steer my life, right? That's when prayer works, right? And that's where it's proven to work for me. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. Underline also. There's a lot of great spiritual things to play with, right? There's a lot of different meditation paths. There's a lot of different religions that attract different people. You know, yoga, whatever. We attend to those things also, right? I've done a lot of different spiritual stuff, right? But I've seen how people can get so far off into this spiritual path that they forget all this. They don't do this, right? We have a common solution, and it's in this book. That other stuff is things that we do also, and it all enhances the spiritual path, but it shouldn't replace it. Because for someone like me, right, I've seen that I have the ability to make that more important than everything else because it makes me feel good. Right? It puts me in a place that of comfort. It puts me in a, you know, it takes me to this other place, right? That distracts me from this spiritual path. Right? And I've seen people around me get so into this stuff. You know, you see people drop out of the bottom of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had a lot of friends that have popped out of the top of Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? You know, they get so into the other spiritual path, and then the guru starts saying, "Well, don't you think, if you really believed that you could transcend this physical craving and mental obsession?" You know, and this is a true story. Actually, I've had a group of friends who were with a guru that said that. You know, if you really believed in this path, then maybe you're not alcoholic anymore. And you'll never really move along further along this path till you really have that much faith. Right? They're all drinking. Right? Not one of them is still on that I'm thinking of that was in this group, didn't drink or use. So we attend to that also, not instead. If not a member of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right and make use of what they have to offer. Again, I'm not putting down this other stuff, but don't ignore this stuff, this what's in the book, right? No matter what spiritual path I'm on, I need to watch my behavior, 10. Be willing to turn to God for help with all of that stuff, in 11, right? Which is what the next paragraph is about. And I believe that this is my daily practice. See, I like to say that I have a 16-hour meditation every day. The other 8 hours I'm sleeping. Right? In the third step, we made a decision on a way of life. Right? We looked at the actor, director, father, child, principal, and agent. We looked at the idea that I failed to direct my life. Right? So I came to the place where hereafter in this drama of life, God has to be the director, and I have to just be the actor. And that hereafter in this drama of life, I failed to provide what I needed on my own power, so I had to believe that God, the Father, the Provider, will provide what I need. Right? And it also talks about the principal and agent. Right? I saw that the agent acts on behalf of the principal. Right? Me being the principal trying to make you act on my behalf didn't work. Right? I couldn't make you be who I would have you be. Right? I still try sometimes. But I couldn't make you be who I would have you be. I couldn't make me be who I would have me be, right? So hereafter in this drama of life, God is the principal and I'm the agent and I will be who God would have me be. That was the decision that we made in the third step, right? And it was a decision based on a way of life, and this is the way of life that it was referring to. As I go through the day, I pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. It's because I believe that God will provide what I need if I turn to Him. That's the father and child relationship. Right? It's a decision in the third step. It's the way I live now in the 11th step. It says we constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. Right? God's the director. I'm the actor. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, Thy will be done. What would God have me be? Right? That's the principal and agent. Right? Whenever I have problems during my day with situations and people around me, it's always because I've lost track of this. Right? I'm trying to run something here. I'm trying to direct something. I'm trying to make somebody be who I would have them be. I'm trying to provide what I need on my own power, ignoring God. Right? But if I stay mindful of this way of life, this exercise to practice during the day, I'm then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. Right? When I'm trying to arrange relationships to suit me, friends to suit me, situations to suit me, work to suit me. Right? And sometimes it just feels like it's totally uphill. Right? And sometimes you just have to sit back and look at your behavior and say, right, where's God in all this? You know, where's God in all this? Right? Because when I start to rely on a power greater than myself and learn how to access that power and trust that that'll come, it all gets easier. It all gets easier. It works. It really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in this simple way we have just outlined. Right. A discipline is a practice, right? I've heard a lot of other descriptions of that word in this sentence, but it's just a practice. Right? But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. So there's more. All right. So my basic practice over the years has become much less structured. I've reduced it primarily down to just trying to practice the mindfulness during the day, right? Considering my behavior in the evening, and it doesn't take long, right? Usually know what's at the forefront of your mind if the rest of it's been cleared away, because there's not so much confusion. There's just a few things to consider, or nothing, right? Right? And when I get up, I remember what I considered the night before. I mean, if it's complicated enough that you have to write it, you write it, but it's usually not that complicated, right? And I mindfully bring that into my day. It's that simple. And the whole idea is for me to stay connected, stay clear, in a clear place, free from all of this stuff that blocks me from God. So, about step 12. Tyler asked me to talk a little bit about how what I do in Big Book Awakening came about. And I thought that this would be a good time to talk about it, because really it's connected to step 12. Right? Plus I wanted to make sure I had enough time for 10 and 11. So I think I'm just going to start in the beginning, as far back as I can remember, from the stories that I've heard. And the thing about being recorded, especially when you're talking about things like history and stuff, you know, I've heard more stories since last time I talked about the history. And I like wish I could go back and like erase that part in the recording that said a particular thing, because it's changed a little bit since the last time I talked about the history. A lot of what I do came originally from some guys in Colorado who were influenced by a guy that came down from Winnipeg, Canada, from the Golden Slippers group, and his name was Mac Cheater. Mac Cheater was the main speaker at the Denver Young People's Group, and this must, I forgot the year, it must have been about 40 years ago, right? And he left such an impact on some of these guys that were in this group that they contacted him, and they wanted to know more about what he was doing, because in his group, that they called the Golden Slippers, they called themselves the Golden Slippers because they couldn't stay sober. They the whole group of them. You know, they knew that they had really bad recovery, so they came up with the name Golden Slippers. Leave it to an alcoholic to come up with a name like that. We're not just slippers, we're golden slippers, right? But what had happened was they decided to change the format of the meeting to a book study, right? And the basic idea was they're going to start at the beginning of the book and just do whatever the book says to do. When it said pray, they would pray. When it said write, they'd write, right? And throughout the whole book, they would just consider what they were reading as a group. Their recovery greatly improved, right? The group I hear is still going on today. There's still Golden Slippers in Canada. But the group that Mac Cheaters was in, this is what his experience is that he talked about, that just doing this simple change, instead of going there and doing whatever the group was doing, they're going to go through the book and consider what it means to them. Not just what those guys back there did back then, right? But what does it mean to me, right? You know, and if it could happen to them, if I do this, this should happen to me, right? So these Denver Young People group members were excited to hear all this, and they got together in a little group, and what I had said wrong in the past is I thought Mac Cheaters moved to Colorado, but I later found out that actually they were in communication with him over the phone for instructions and for input to help them through the workshop. He actually went back to Winnipeg, Canada, and they did the workshop on their own, which, again, I think is good because it points to the idea that it doesn't have to be Mac Cheaters doing it, right? They had the big book and they had some basic instructions and it worked for them. In fact, it worked so well that there was 14 people in the group. 13 of them stayed sober the rest of their lives. Some of them are still alive today. Only one person drank and ended up dying. I've heard a couple different stories. The most exciting one is that he froze to death in the Colorado winter. But I, at this point, I'm not sure of that either, because it wasn't really written down anywhere. These are just bits and pieces that I've been pulling together from the people that are still alive. So, but other than that, the other 13 all stayed sober and up around like 40 years of sobriety. I've been like 37 something. I don't know exactly. I'm sure they're different, the different members. But something struck them. And it struck them so powerful that it reproduced itself over and over and over again. Because they started working with other people the same way, right? And it's just spread into this powerful, powerful fellowship of the spirit. And my grand sponsor, Don Pritz, was in that workshop. And his sponsor, Gary Brown, was in the workshop. Gary's still alive. Don Pritz died a few years back, I think 2003. And my sponsor was Joe Hawk, who passed away 3 years ago. Okay. And Joe worked with Don initially, and basically just what I'm saying, they went through the book, discussing what it meant to him, doing whatever the book said when they got to the point in the book. It said to pray, they prayed and said, write, just taking the book literally. And Joe had a great experience with it. Joe was a great teacher, though. He was really good at regurgitating this information that he had. And I think Don kind of picked up on that and that Joe needed more input, right, to keep him busy while the real magic happened. Right? You tend to think that we have to work really hard to figure out what we have to do here, and we put all this effort in to find out that there's really nothing we can do. But it took doing all that work to find out that there's nothing we can do. We need God. But he started working with a lot of other people in the area that gave him a lot of information. And I came in at around when he had about 5 years of sobriety, after he had worked with some of my biggest AA heroes in the Big Book community. So I was pretty, I want to say lucky, but blessed, I should say, to have been able to come at that point where I could get a little bit of all of them, right? And Joe's instructions really didn't change much from the original instructions. He said, we're going to go through the book and consider what it means to you personally, to look at your own experience. And when the book says pray, we're going to pray. When it says write, we're going to write. And we're just going to take the book literally and just do what the book says. So my first instruction that I got from Joe was go through the book, read it, and wherever you see questions that are meaningful to you, mark the questions in the book. So I went home and I did just that. I'd find the questions and I'd write the questions and I'd think, you know, this is really complicated, you know, the little lines and trying to squeeze all that wording in between the sentences. You know, I did it. And I'd go back to Joe's place for the next meeting because I was over there once a week and Joe was funny. He had all these mints laid out across his coffee table, and he'd sit and he'd like straighten them up in little rows, like multiple little rows, and he'd do the same thing with the cigarettes. He actually showed me his sock drawer once, and he did the same thing with his socks, but that's it's another issue, I guess. That's an outside issue, I guess. But he'd say, "Let me see your book." And I'd show him my book, and he'd look at it, and he'd do this. He had this weird, this sinister laugh. And I'd say, "What?" You know, because I thought I did exactly what he said. He said, "Go through the book, mark the questions where you see them in the book, and consider them." And I would just every week I would just come home and just keep writing all the questions in the book where I saw the questions. And I had to find the questions. Right? You guys don't have to find them. But what had happened was, finally, I realized that it wasn't until I was done. That he said, mark the questions in the book, and when I looked at other people's books, they just like highlighted, underlined, or made little marks where the questions were. So they marked where the questions were in the book rather than write the questions in. So I found out why he was giggling so much, right? Because he was big on not getting in the way of anybody else's spiritual path, right? And he just probably figured I needed to write. Which was true, actually, because my reading comprehension was okay. It wasn't necessarily great. And what I found, though, was that it was really helpful because I got right into working with others. There's a lot of people that start working, that go through the big book or go through 12 steps work with people, and then it comes time when they're supposed to be sponsoring people, and they say, "Well, I don't remember what we did in the beginning." You've heard that? Yeah, or said, maybe you've said that, right? Which is why I asked, how many generations of sponsorship are here, right, in the beginning? Because that's common for me to go to a dinner and you'll see a sponsee with their sponsee and their sponsee all at the same table. Right? That's common, right? In a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's not common. Right? Some people will work with a couple people in their AA lifetime and think that they're doing the work. Right? That's just not the case with this, because when people see something like this, they get excited and people get hungry for it. And a lot of you know that it's not hard once you get it, once you get touched by it, right, for people to smell it on you. Right? You smell, start to smell like someone that knows what they're talking about. Right? It can be overwhelming at sometimes. Sometimes it can feel like a curse, not a blessing, right? Right. Just because so many people want more, you know. But in there comes understanding, you know, who we need to work with and who we don't have to work with and who's ready to do this and who isn't ready to do this. And I have to sometimes just detach from all of that and understand that I'm not necessarily their red phone to God. They have to develop their own relationship. And it has to be between them and God, not between God, me, to them, and vice versa. Which is another real important thing is when they're 10-stepping with me, right? 10-step is about them continuing to take personal inventory, not me analyzing what the situation was for them, right? So when people want to do a 10-step with me, the people that want that from me, they don't call much, right? The truth is they don't need to. They're welcome to. I do not, I'm really available to the people that I work with, especially when it comes to 10, 11, and 12. But they know the drill. Because if they're continuing to take personal inventory, here's what I want to hear from them. What is your behavior that you found objectionable in the situation? Did you see you ignored turning to God in the middle of it all? And are you willing to turn to God for help with that? Okay. If they've done that, they don't need to call anymore. Right? If they can't do it, then it's a different issue because they're clinging to some part of it that they're unable to let go of and unable to even turn to God for help with it. Right? And then we have a little discussion. Right? Then I become helpful to them. But more times than not, my involvement with the people that I work with is about directing them to God, not to me, for their reliance, for their dependence. Right? It's a lot of work when people are dependent on you. It can be really draining. Right? Really draining, especially when you know you don't have a solution for them. Right? Like when someone calls you that has never done the work and there's all these things going on. And it's really not all these things going on. There's only one. Your problem's spiritual, your solution's in front of you. When do you want to start? Right? Problems, you know, I didn't learn that the easy way. You know, I wanted to get a sponsor that would listen to my stuff. I wanted to call and complain about her and work and, you know, and on, and there's been times that I've picked sponsors in the beginning based on how much they're willing to listen to. You've heard that too. You're not gonna, you know, you don't have time for me. You know, I got to find this person. She has more time than me, more time for me, right? You know, when I would call Joe about like relationship stuff, he'd grunt. He'd go, ugh. Right? You know, but I understood. It's like, you know, just, okay, finish the four step. You know, get back to work. Right? Because he wasn't my solution. He was working with so many people as himself. He didn't have time for this kind of that kind of stuff for me. So. So my job is here is to help people get to that solution, to God, right? And the only way that I know how to do that is to sit with somebody and work through the process, right? And if you want to know something well, teach it, right? It doesn't say in the book that we grow spiritually through sitting for hours and hours in meditation, right? It talks about in the book that we grow spiritually through work and self-sacrifice with others. And when I'm talking to another person who's like me, right, there is spiritual growth, right? Now there's also a mental part of it, right? And in there, I believe that I can work with anybody. I can work with people that aren't alcoholic. Right, but it's all up here. It's all up here. Alcoholics Anonymous talks about singleness of purpose, and everybody wants to think about the newcomers in regards to singleness of purpose. Right, but that wasn't how it started. Nobody thought that they were necessarily going to strike anybody sober in the beginning. They were talking to people that were like them because it touched something inside of them, deep down inside of them. Right. I can work with somebody who's not like me, who did drugs that I didn't do, who did behavior I didn't do. But it's all up here. When it comes to the first step, you know, I can try to intellectualize it, or I could try to ask the right questions to help you come to your own solution. Right? But it becomes work, becomes something that's going on in my head. But anybody that works with a lot of people and has had this experience has got to have had this experience is that it's not work when you're working with someone who is just like you, you know, who drank like you, who used drugs like you, because that touches you in here. Because you know when you're telling your story, they're getting it. You see it in their eyes. When they're telling their story, when they're talking about what they did, you're getting it in here. It's like, yeah, I know that place. Right? And it becomes truly a spiritual process. And to see somebody that was as hopeless as you have this life that's completely in the toilet like yours was in the beginning. You know, I came in, I'd lost everything in the beginning. I had nothing I lost the business, lost the relationship, the marriage. Couldn't afford to pay for the place that I was living in. Right? I had nothing left. Right? And my life turned around. To work with somebody, they didn't necessarily have to have lost everything, but to work with somebody who comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, or whatever program you're in, you see them, you know, they come completely spiritually bankrupt. You know, how could there possibly be a God that cares about me, right, with my life like this? And you start to work with them, you know, and you just start at the beginning of the book, and you look at it, you walk them through this process, and you see them start to change. And along that path, you start to you say things, and it's something that only someone can say that's just like you. You know, they don't necessarily say anything, but you see it in their eyes. Sometimes it's just glassy and watered up, or sometimes you just see that something struck them at such a deep level that just something turned inside and spiritually for them. That something awoken and deep down inside them, and it had nothing to do with me. It just had to do with me going through the book, considering the what the book is saying, and looking at how do you relate to that personally? What's your experience with that, right? And you just see something happening that you know you can't do. I can't make someone spiritual, right? I can't. Right? But the path changes them. The path does something to them. And when I feel that with someone just like me, and I see somebody else recover that was just like me, there's this internal thing, this connection that we have that didn't happen with the therapist that I tried to talk to, with the friends that I tried to talk to when I wanted to get sober. You know, just there was something different happening here, and it's just really important to not miss that experience. A lot of people will say, "Well, nobody asked me. Right? I give out my cards. Right? Nobody calls me." And, you know, when you think about it, when you were new, how many cards did you come home with from a meeting? You end up with that stack of 50 cards sitting on your desk. I mean, mine has my picture on it, so. the other, you know, most of them, though, you go, who's this? Right? We got lazy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, if you really want to work with someone, right, you don't have to necessarily even raise your hand in a meeting saying, "Please, I want someone to work with." You know, you're not going to want to work with just anybody, right? But the newcomers will tell you who they are, right? They get asked to raise their hand at the beginning of every meeting, right? Who's new? Right? They say, here I am, right? And you look around the room. If you really want to find someone to work with, you look around the room and you say, "I could work with that person." Right? And you go over and you hand them their card and you take theirs. Right? And you remember how you walked into the program not knowing anybody in the room, not knowing what's going on, having a lot of questions, not even believing that you need to be here. Right? Because I'm just not like you people. Remember that? I'm just not as bad as you people. And you take their number, right? And you call them. And you don't have to sponsor them. But you have to extend the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous out to them, right? And just say, "Hey, how are you doing? I'm going to this meeting today. You know, do you want to go? I'll pick you up. We'll stop and have coffee beforehand. You can ask me questions about this crazy place. whatever works for the, you know, is where, you know, they have a lot of questions. They don't know what's going on. They don't know anybody. All they know is somebody called them and reached out. And some people will really appreciate that.
Right.
They might tell you no. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter because when they're going through that stack of cards, right, they're going to remember which one called them and which one didn't. Which one extended their hand out to them and which ones just blindly or just threw out a card. At the end of the meetings, we always ask people to go to dinner with us. Right? We put it out there to the whole group. Not a lot of people want to go to dinner after the meetings every week. But you know, because that's really where a lot of this stuff really happens. Right? Because meetings are kind of, you know, people aren't necessarily comfortable just standing up saying what they really are feeling or what they're really thinking or asking the questions that they really have, you know. But if you can maneuver them to a coffee shop, or a restaurant of some sort, and with a small group of people, right? You start to connect, and you start to make them comfortable, and you know, people will start to ask you to sponsor them if you just show a little bit of concern. It doesn't even take much. You know why it doesn't take much? Because you don't have much competition in the room. Right? Because all they've got is a stack of cards that they have no face and connection with. Right? You reach out a little and it goes a long way. You know, and I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Again, I said I lost everything. I felt worthless. I thought, is this really what my life has come down to? But the fact is that nothing that I've ever done in my life has given me so much value, so much self-worth about myself. Nothing I've ever done has helped me so much to live in this world as this program. It doesn't mean I just don't get the thoughts of, you know, questioning myself and questioning my life. And maybe I'm working with way too many people. But I can never question the value and the importance that I have in the world, right? Just based on some of the special people in my life today. The people that I've seen come in here just like me, and they've got good jobs and nice houses and relationships, and some of them don't, right? But they don't have what they walked in with. Right? They have a lot more. They have a new life, and that's what this is about. It's getting a new life, and it's an experience you must not miss. So, I'm going to stop here and just ask for some, if anybody has any questions that they'd like to ask me. Or should I have just talked another half an hour to make it on two CDs instead of one?
Oh, it's already on two.
It's already on two, okay. Okay.
Just on the part on awakening, I kind of missed on awakening for our day and planning our plan for the day. Was it my plan for the day or is it my
plan for the day is based on what came to me in the consideration in the evening in my nightly review. And my nightly review is based on how well did I 10-step during the day. Right? Because if I didn't 10-step well, I'm going to have a lot of things to consider at night. Okay.
It's Chris. I'm not on.
Hey, Chris.
I want to ask you how long it took you, you know, actually, honestly, truthfully, you know, to complete all 12 steps the first time around.
The first time, there was a couple different ways. I went through 5 sponsors in my first year. So it was a little hard to really talk about the first time, but the first time through the big book, I balked in the four step and I balked in the ninth, in eight and nine. So it took me longer than I'd want, than I like to admit. And I don't necessarily think that that's bad, because I learned some important things about myself in the process. You know, certainly in the ninth step, I learned that fear is what always stopped me, what always blocked me. And in the fourth step, I learned that losing touch with the reality of that I could drink again, because the first step was not that I can't drink again, but that I will. And if I stop at any point of the process, it's because I lost touch with the idea and think that, you know, the problem's not there. I don't, not awake to the problem. So it took me a couple of years to finish the ninth step, but the first time through the big book, I finished every single amends that came to me, that came up in the ninth step.
So the reason I ask is I heard you mention about the eighth and ninth step, you know, and growing up alcoholics here, and from the lifestyle I've been accustomed to living most of my life, you know, they talk about making the amends, and they tell you that, you know, except when they do so, would injure yourself or others.
Doesn't, yeah.
You know, there's just some things that I have a difficult time doing. Yeah. I'm not going to go door to door, check it out, dude. I'm sorry for robbing you, jacking you, holding you up. And I want to know how we can figure out, you know, a payment plan.
Well, the book doesn't say, except when to do so, so would injure myself, right?
Yeah.
In fact, it says we're hard on ourselves and easy and conscious of others. I forgot the exact words.
Yeah, the only reason I was asking that is because I don't have a problem going to sleep, because I'm on maximum service, you know, 24/7. I've got 5.5 years. I've run a drug and alcohol treatment facility downtown San Diego, and I deal with a lot of alcoholics and addicts. And a lot of times people will ask that question. I'm just asking you your own experience.
Okay.
Is that okay?
That they don't finish the ninth step?
No, they have to finish the ninth step. I know that. It's not a two-step program. You know, it's all or nothing.
Okay, I missed the question, though.
What
I'm sorry.
What I was asking is that, do you come across a lot of people that, just based on what I just asked you right now, that say that, well, you know, what about all these other, you know, amends that need to be made? You know, what other advice would you give to one?
How free do you want to be? How free do you want to be? Right? Because if there's amends that I don't make, it's usually because I'm blocked by fear. And if I'm blocked by fear, that's a great opportunity to see how well God can work if I turn to God. And that became a priceless experience for me, to see that where I fall short, God can take me beyond that in every area and everything that I.
So it's basically an individual base, you know.
I think everybody needs to finish amends to have that experience.
Yeah.
Usually, if they don't think they need to, right? Remember in the ninth step it says, "Remember, in the beginning we were willing to go to any length," right? Well, here's any length, right? in the ninth step, right? Because that's when that's when most people fall short in the program, finishing amends.
Bryce.
Well, why do you work with people?
Why do you work with people? To take yourself out of yourself and to carry the message, which is...
We grow spiritually through work and self-sacrifice for others, whether they stay sober or not. I cannot be responsible for what they do in this, whether they do this. I am responsible for the message I carry them. So if you trust the message that you've got up to that point, then certainly... then you're equipped with part of what you need. I mean, we have a lot more than Bill had going in, right? And it didn't stop. Look, Bill and Bob went out and did their thing before they even knew what they were doing. You know, and a lot of AA is still like that. You know, but if you've got some really good instructions that you trust, you're still in a better position than people that say they have finished, that don't have good instructions that create reproducible results. So, you know, again, God has to work directly through them, not independent of what you do. I mean, in fact, my first workshop, I got cornered into starting when I was still in the fourth step. And I forgot about this, actually, and that goes back to your other question. That's what actually drove me through the finishing the fourth step, because they were going to catch up to me. So, and I didn't kill them. A lot of they're all still sober today. And you know.
I'm just kind of and I've been sober before, and I created a huge amount of wreckage when I went out for back home. And I've got financial debts that are enormous, and they're everywhere, and places I can't remember, and things I get in backups that I don't remember. What do I do about...
Isn't there a lot of men's that aren't financial?
Yes.
Maybe you can start with those and put... In the ninth step, we write all the amends on to index cards, and there's a stack. And I pray, I ask God to show me the next indicated amends that I'm willing to do. And probably the financial ones might go into